I'd like to call the Customer Service and Operations Committee to order. The agenda is before us for the day. Are there any comments or questions? Hearing none, we'll accept the agenda as presented. The approval of the minutes of February 12th, is there a motion?
So moved.
A second? Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Thank you. Before us today, we have two information items. The first, Assistant General Manager of Customer Service Communications and Marketing, Lynn Barasak, will provide an update on WMATA's partnerships that promote ridership through destination and event marketing and smart benefits. Mrs. Barasak will also review marketing's advertising program that generates revenue by selling advertising within our own system. Next, we'll hear from Assistant General Manager Christian Kent for Access Services, and he will provide the committee an update on the ongoing study of sustainability of Metro Access paratransit services. This is a study that was directed by this board as part of an adoption of our 2015 budget, and Mr. Kent will update us today and provide us with the financial context of the study and some very key findings on it. And Mrs. Barasak will start with the business partnership encouraging us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to the board. We had a question from Mr. Gunning some time ago about how we are promoting off-peak ridership, and this presentation is in part a response to that inquiry. We also, as you may recall, had some feedback from our customers with respect to a recent survey that we did regarding balancing the budget, and the most popular response from our customers was to increase commercial revenue through more advertising, and so this presentation is also in part a response to our customers' request to know more about what we're doing in that regard. So today I'll talk first about marketing partnerships and how those work here at Metro. We have used partnerships to promote ridership on both Metro Bus and Metro Rail to local and regional destinations and special events. We have tried to engage through these partnerships Metro in the communities we serve and add value to the price of the rider's ticket. That's an important criteria in the partnerships. And largely these partnerships depend on bartered services more than any sort of cash investment to keep them cost effective. An example that you see on the screen, this was an APTA award-winning piece of Fair Media. The first special edition one we did as part of this program was with the Phillips Collection. We used the special edition Smart Trip card to promote the Van Gogh exhibit a little more than a year ago, and it not only helped people have a reason to buy a new Smart Trip card, and as you know, the average rider keeps a Smart Trip card in their wallet for about 4.5 years, so it's not a frequent purchase, but in this case, it was a popular card, and so not only did we sell out of 200,000 quite quickly, the Phillips Collection reported record sales in their souvenir shop and admission to this exhibit by virtue of the discount that was offered by the presentation of the Smart Trip card. And we also increased ridership through the DuPont Circle Station 5% over the same period the previous year. So it's a win-win. And that's what we shoot for in all of these partnerships. Last year we signed 25 more partnerships agreements, and each one increased attendance at events and resulted in higher ridership, largely, again, off-peak ridership, mostly weekends, some evenings, and midday schedules. On average, these 25 partnerships generated about a 4% ridership increase over the same period the year prior, or over the same period where the event took place without a co-promotion. So one example that you see here is the National Zoo. It's celebrating its 125th anniversary. We, of course, issued the special edition Zoo Baby Smart Trip cards. I have to say these are among the most popular we've ever had. Bao Bao sells. She and her tiger friends and seal pups sold out in a couple of months 300,000 Smart Trip cards. They were very popular. The Smithsonian, of course, controls the National Zoo, operates the National Zoo, and they're still waiting to gauge what the overall attendance would be, but this card works in the same way. Well, admission to the zoo is free and they accept donations. This gets you 10% off in the souvenir shop. So probably that's the metric that they'll use to see how much redemption they had with the card. But their objective is very important. The Smithsonian Zoo has, the National Zoo has, very, very limited parking. And on off-peak weekends and evening hours, they're really looking for people to take Metro to Woodley Park in order to reduce the demand for parking. And so this works for them as well. We had an exhibit this year in a partnership for the first time with the Capital Pride event. It draws about $350,000 annually. Just so you know what kind of an event that is for us, we had about 50,000 riders come through Gallery Place Station for that event. And then, of course, the auto show we've participated in now 2 years in a row. We have an exhibit set up there, including a Metro bus, which is the most popular part of our exhibit. People love to walk through the hybrid bus. And in the 10 days of the auto show, which includes all of the exhibitor setup time as well as the attendance at the exhibits, we get a 131% increase in ridership through the Mount Vernon Square station. So in 2014 with the partnership, we saw about 2,000 more riders than we had in 2013. So each year a little bit more. And the other part of this partnership is with respect to special events or venues like this, they then promote riding Metro in all of their marketing. And so that's what they bring to the table as well as the discount for our riders. And so we get to, you know, ride on their coattails, so to speak, with respect to the investment they make in the marketplace. We had top five partners last year in terms of ridership draws. The NBC for Health and Fitness Expo, which was last January, we had a 17% increase. We had about 1,700 more trips for that than we had the previous year. And you can see the rest. Adams Morgan Day was very popular. Flow Fest. If you're not familiar with Flow Fest, it is a festival annually that we promote travel through Anacostia Rail Station. There's lots of different activities. It's a combination of literature, wine tasting, product sales, and green sort of products, all kinds of different things for the community. And that was very popular. We had about 2,700 riders through the rail station for that event. And then, of course, the International Festival in Prince George's County, which is growing in popularity. And this year at Largo Town Center, we increased ridership about 1%. We had about 3,500 people through Largo Town Center for that event. And then, of course, our very popular Silver Saturday results with respect to Tyson's and our Silver Line launch last year. We teamed up with the Tyson's Partnership on a number of events, including the Tyson's Job Fair, Beer and Bourbon Festival, and Food Truck Festival. And then during the holiday season, we offered customers, when they showed their Smart Trip card, a 10% discount at most of the retailers at Tyson's Corner Mall. And because the way the mall works and each retailer is approaches their redemption metrics differently, we did our own research with respect to awareness level about the promotion Silver Saturdays, which was sort of a playoff of Black Fridays. And we found that among our riders, we had about a 16% increase in actual Saturday ridership at the Tyson's Corner Station. On each of the three Silver Saturdays, and when we surveyed our customers, 84% were aware of the promotion, and a large percentage said they intended to cash in on the discount, and that was one of the reasons for their decision to travel. So we know that the shopping destination there, particularly over the holidays, was an attraction. We have other smaller partners that maybe don't get as much attention. One of my favorites is the Holiday Inn Express at Andrews Joint Base in Camp Springs, Maryland. What they do as part of their partnership with us is anybody who books a room with them, their guests get two $8 preloaded Smart Trip cards and a complimentary shuttle to Branch Avenue Metro, as well as a complimentary breakfast and their DC map. So they, when you book, whether or not you intended to travel by Metro, they're promoting that option to their guests. And we think that's a great way for local businesses to leverage the transportation opportunities that that we have for their guests. We are, again, partnering with the Ubiquitous Hair and Health Expo. It's a great event geared towards African-American female small businesses. It brings together hair salons throughout the region. About 4,800 people attend that. It's also a great opportunity for us to promote DBE opportunities and to do recruitment for job prospects here at Metro. We combine all of those things. And, of course, there's the ubiquitous Safeway barbecue battle, which draws about 60,000 participants each year, and we partner with them. Again, we do employment opportunities, service information, travel and transit, advertising, including the Smart Benefits Program, which we're coming to very soon here. Destination DC, as many of you know, has been working with us to promote travel through event planners. They are this year for the first time marketing the board specially approved three-day $30 convention pass, which is intended to help them promote the region as a destination for conventions and conferences and to be competitive with other regions who also discount their transit travel for that reason. We're proud to announce our very first sale of the convention pass to the American Academy of Neurology Institute, and we have Dr. Phil Posner to thank, who was our, we don't give commissions, we just give credit, but he was the door opener on that sale, so we appreciate it, and we welcome the 1,500 neurologists to the National Capital Region this year. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is also participating with us in a number of events. There's about 550 Hispanic and minority-owned businesses that are members of the chamber, and through their events, we promote Smart Benefits. Employers sign up, and we also do outreach around workforce recruitment and DBE opportunities. So they are likewise partnering to promote Metro to local businesses. And then we have some more in the pipeline, which you'll see in the next slide, including many area restaurants, hotels, and malls. With respect to Smart Benefits, which is another way that we promote both commutation and off-peak ridership, this has been a challenging year, of course, because of the change in federal tax policy. The Smart Benefits program is less attractive than it had been in prior years. However, we did achieve our goal last year of a 5% increase in Smart Benefits accounts, and that means employer accounts. We had more than 300 new employers sign up to offer this benefit, either pre-tax or the subsidy, to their workforce, which is terrific. And we have another goal this year of another 3% increase, so we're not slowing down. But last year's bump was largely because of the Silver Line opportunities. Employers along the Silver Line were very excited about saving up. But we'll be continuing to promote Smart Benefits through the Greater Washington Board of Trade. They have a workshop series, an annual meeting, and various things we participate in. There's an employer seminar coming up in Montgomery County. We have the Northern Virginia Business Expo and some meetings with the City of Alexandria staff. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And the Fairfax County, thank you, Madam Chair, folks have their own program called Smart Benefits Plus 50 that they're using to promote to the government workforce. So we're trying to partner on all of those opportunities. And then we also have internally with our planning group an effort underway to conduct an analysis of urban employment areas that have access to Metro Rail, but with low entry and exit numbers at their local stations. And by doing that sort of geo-targeting, we'll be going out to them to try to be persuasive around how Smart Benefits can help their workforce and also offer where we have underutilized parking for commuters that they may have working there that would prefer to drive and park or drive, park, and use Metro Rail or Metro Bus. And so that will be coming this year. Switching to transit advertising, if I may, we have a very robust program to generate non-fare commercial revenues that support our core rail and bus services. In the last calendar year, Metro earned more than $19 million in transit advertising sales. We have a new contract for an agency to sell that advertising on our behalf. That contract includes elevating the minimum annual guarantee from $8 million a year to about $20 million a year over the five-year life of the agreement, which began this fiscal year. This new contract also has a benefit of an upside for Metro that grew above the minimum annual guarantee. Any revenues earned are shared with Metro at a 68% split level, which is up from the previous contract. Our agent is formerly known as CBS Outdoor, now called Outfront Media. And they do creative placements to try to generate more revenue for us. On this slide, on station dominations, You will see a Macy's domination at Metro Center and a Reebok domination campaign at Navy Yard Station. In some transit agencies, they've begun experimenting with station naming. This is a very interesting alternative to losing the wayfinding benefits of a station name, but allowing the presence of brands that want to be in front of our riders. And if anybody came through Gallery Place today on their way to this meeting, you'll see T-Mobile has a very hot pink, this was a coincidence, ad campaign that has just totally taken over the branding of that station. And it's very attractive, and it's a great way for them to promote their services to our riders. We have coming this spring a new program in digital advertising. We're going to be replacing some of our static signage in 8 stations with digital media displays. This is happening at the expense of our contracted agent. They'll recover that expense through revenues in advertising sales. The first screen will be at Gallery Place at the 7th and F Street mezzanine, and the rest will be at Metro Center, Farragut North, Farragut West, Federal Triangle, Capitol South, Foggy Bottom, and Pentagon. These digital signs allow us to increase the monetization of transit advertising by allowing us to switch out messaging more frequently. And once the pilot is proven, we'll move to expand it throughout the rail system. We also have some planned expansion around gate advertising, fare gate displays, as well as we're going to try our first interior rail car wrap as a transit advertising sale promotion and see what kind of market there is for the interior wraps. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Madam Ms. Barasak. It's a very exciting presentation. I think it gives us a lot of opportunities, and it's leveraging, and I think that has budget as well as output into the community. Let me open it up, Mr. Downey.
I just want to share that view. As we struggle to balance the budget of this authority, every dollar that we can bring in through all of these mechanisms is a dollar less we have to ask for from other people. So keep aggressive, keep after it. Great results, particularly in the advertising. We just have to work that through. I did have one question on the Silver Saturday promotion. Do we have any data that would show where those riders were coming from?
Yes, we do. And largely they track the same way that Silver Line rider commutation patterns are tracking. They are regional.
They are regional.
Throughout the region.
Coming to Tyson's Corners from all across the region.
Yes, sir. So it's Northern Virginia, and so they're coming from Arlington, but it's also the district. There's a lot of district travel coming out for shopping and from Maryland from the beginning of the line as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Bulger.
Lynn, thanks for the report. I wanted to see if you all have followed up on the District of Columbia's I'm going to read it here. It's called the Sustainability DC Act of 2014, which says that at January 1 of 2016, employers with more than 25 employees must offer the transit benefit. I know that DDOT, where's my DDOT, Paul? I know that you all have a toolkit that you all have done on this ordinance, and whether we are coordinating effectively to make sure that this new ordinance, which is based on the New York City ordinance, which is based on the San Francisco Bay Area ordinance, it gets off to a rousing start. So the question I have initially is the Board of Trade on board with implementing this ordinance with us or coordinating with us?
So I can tell you that we are coordinating with the district. We are partnering with their Go DC Go transit demand team, is what they've called it, to enroll employers. We have certain meetings and outreach opportunities already scheduled on that throughout the course of the year. I'm sorry that I have to get back to you on what the Board of Trade's level of involvement is. Unless somebody from the district can speak to that, I'm not contemporary on that.
Would it be possible in coordinating with the DC staff to also reach out to the Department of Employment Services for the District of Columbia, who the ones that issue the guidelines and notices to employers regarding new ordinances, in particular this one? What I'm trying to get at is, just for a second, is that these ordinances typically, I'm looking at my new board member here, the business community gets surprised that they have to do these, implement these ordinances. In our work that I've done in the San Francisco Bay Area, which helped the New York City mayor sign a law, was to diffuse all that early on by explaining that this is a win-win for employers because they can save some money on FICA, workman's compensation, if they offer the benefit to their employees, and it's a great tool to attract workers who, as we're seeing, like our sons, they don't have a car. They just don't own a vehicle. So I'd like to get going on that as early because it, I'll end by saying you have to have this in place by October because it takes months to sign employees up to get the benefit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bolger, and we can work with the jurisdictions to do so. Ms. Hines and then Mr. Giancola, Mr. Goldman, and then we'll...
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. I too, am wondering how we can help employers understand that this is a win for them. I am currently serving on the Workforce Investment Board for the state of Virginia, and it strikes me that if WMATA has some ways that they can sort of capture this in a one-pager, that there are ways through those networks to begin to share this message with a variety of different employers. So anything you could put together for us, I think, would be really helpful. And then my last question for you, Lynn, is Silver Saturdays is really a great example of everybody working together to get something good for riders, but also to use the system. Are you having similar conversations with the bids across the region, whether they're in D.C., Maryland, or Virginia?
We are, as well as with individual retailers, and we hope to have a large regional retailer announcement very soon.
Okay, so if there's anything that you need help with relative to my jurisdiction, to Open Doors or whatever, please do let me know, because I think it would be much to Arlington's benefit to use this kind of a promotion on occasion when it makes sense.
Thank you, and we'll get you the one page.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, just a quick question for Mr. Bolger. Certainly I support this effort, but could you clarify the bill for me, the 2014 sustainability bill? Does it require them, or is it encouraging them?
As I read the ordinance, it requires it to be offered.
All right, so it's a mandate. It's required by a certain date to make that decision?
Starting January 1st, 2016.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Goldman.
Lynn, just another question along the same lines of Mr. Bolger's and Ms. Hines. Have you ever, in the past few years, given any consideration to try and meld encouraging more transit benefit programs with advertising? So do we offer a kind of a barter program that if businesses have so many employees signed up, they get so much free advertising on Metro Rail or Metro Bus, or a 50% discount, you know, something that gives individual businesses a greater incentive to actually sign up and encourage passengers, because to the extent that more passengers are signed up, that means more riders and more revenue for Metro.
It's a very interesting idea. We haven't offered that, but I'm going to take note of it and maybe follow up with you on it.
Suggest that you bring maybe an outline or a proposal of what the considerations would be?
Sure.
Back to the committee.
I will.
And I think in that response, I think to the several questions, I think we can look at the benefit requirement that the employer sees, the benefit the rider sees, and what the tools, and I think the metrics of the tools are going to be the very important part, does in terms of the bottom line here at Metro. That's really piece. Thank you very much for a very good presentation, and I think we're moving in the right direction and trying to really be diverse in what we do in order to help not only the service we provide, but also the budgets that we fund. Thank you. Okay, the next item is one also brought, requested by the board, and it is the update on the paratransit service we're providing, and this came out of our 2015 budget. Mr. Kent, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudgens, and good morning. This is indeed an information item, updating the board on the assignment we were given to look at the long-term sustainability of our Metro Access paratransit service. And just for background, we were going to present this item a little bit later, toward the end of the fiscal year, but we wanted to give you kind of a sneak preview of the findings of the study because of the fact that you were in the process of looking at the FY16 budget. I want to preface the presentation by saying that there isn't anything in here that has substantial FY16 impact because of the timetable that it takes to implement some of these items. But obviously, the quicker that we get started on some of these things, the quicker that we can see results. So I want to put that out to begin with. The other thing is that some of the subjects that were part of the study have currency throughout the industry. We just recently attended the APTA legislative conference, and there was a lot of discussion there about some of the issues that that we're facing. And interestingly enough, the heading is not paratransit. It's everything else. We talk about infrastructure, and people tend to think of rail, but the fact is investments in fixed route infrastructure have a tremendous impact and offsetting expense on paratransit. The FTA has also taken note of this sort of thing by assigning someone to look at the role that human service agencies play in providing transportation. So they are helping to bring the human services sector to the table, and we're really excited to see that because that's part of what is being recommended here at WMATA. So in our first slide, we wanted to kind of recap what the actual assignment was. There were five areas that the study is aimed at. The first one is demographic changes and how this will impact the number of people who need paratransit service. And of course, you're all familiar with the statistics that we've shown in the past about the baby boomer bubble, which we are now really riding atop. We've reached that point in time where the majority of baby boomers are coming of senior age. And of course, as we become seniors, we also have a tendency more toward disability. And in addition to that, the life expectancy is also longer. And in fact, our statistics show that if you do reach age 65, then you're going to tend to live longer than the average age for the entire population because you've overcome the challenges that come earlier in life. So with more people in the population in that that older segment and in the disability segment, more people are going to have a dependency on paratransit service. The final report will show all of these statistics. So what I'm showing you this morning is not a heavily statistical presentation. It's really more focused on policy recommendations. But the final report will be coming in June, and we'll have much more detail and granularity to the stats. Second area was, again, in improvements to bus and rail facilities, which also includes bus stops. And of course, we've had a lot of good conversation about that and also some good results. We've already seen a great deal of improvement in the region on making bus stops accessible. But one thing I want to commit to you that you will see from us in the future is that not only are we going to provide you data on how many stops have been made accessible, but we're also going to provide you data hopefully showing some insight into mode shift of people after they're able to make use of these newly improved stops. And we're going to have to develop new mechanisms to capture that data, but we think it's important to kind of underscore the return that everyone is getting on the investment in making bus stops accessible. The third area had to do with human service agencies, and as we've said in the past, they have the ability to provide specialized transportation services much more cost-effectively than we do, partly because they do not have the ADA paratransit requirements over them, but also because many of these agencies already have transportation capabilities. There are vocational programs where people will go and participate in some kind of training, and they're transported during the day while they're at that program. And in some cases, the caseworker also takes that customer home and takes them into the center from home. So those costs are kind of bundled, and it's a completely different structure than the way that Metro provides this kind of service. fourth area had to do with alternative service delivery models for people who need specialized transportation. And the idea here is that Metro Access not only is not the only solution, it also shouldn't be considered the first solution. ADA envisioned paratransit to be really a last resort. After people had the opportunity to vet and look at every other fixed route or other alternative, paratransit service is a safety net for people who have no other alternative to get around. And we provide that safety net. But sometimes what happens is that because it's such a visible service and because it's the largest provider of this kind of service, certainly in the Washington region, many people look at it as the first place to inquire. So our task is that when they come to us and ask about paratransit, that we're ready to offer a great deal of information on alternatives, which we do. But we now have, and we'll allude to this later in the presentation, paratransit alternatives that include things like what we're doing in the district by leveraging taxi services and, of course, a very successful pilot in Maryland that we've been operating for more than a year, where a human service agency was really able to leverage resources that they had with additional funds that were provided by the state of Maryland. And the last area of focus had to do on cost, really just what can we see in the future for the cost of this system. And, of course, I know everyone already knows that our cost per trip is significantly higher than it is on bus and rail. But as we move to the next slide with trepidation, I hesitate to show this picture of the next 10 years, which really I want to emphasize that there are three stars on this graph. And depending on which strategic approach we take, we'll determine which ones of these are the ones that are going to be in our future. We tried to give a range because the growth curve of these bars is 4%. And 4% really is just, you know, kind of a median estimate. And you can see that with our current FY 2016 proposed, 2.3 million passengers is what we expect to carry next year. 10 years hence, it can range from 2.6 to 3.1 million, depending on how effective we are at managing this demand. Next slide. So we want to move on to what can we do about this? Well, there are a few areas where we have some actions that we can take. And clearly, demand management, we've already embarked on this, and we've already implemented some things that have been very effective. The board really kind of pushed over the first domino by establishing ADA-aligned policies in 2010. And this has been very helpful to define really where WMATA should be operating in terms of the service area, the fare, and really what is our mission here. And that's really helped us to establish a baseline. So the recommendation in the study, which, by the way, I neglected to mention, we partnered with George Mason University's Center for Regional Analysis. They helped to compile this report, and they were our research partner. So a lot of the data that you're going to see, they helped us to compile. So these recommendations are coming out of the report that they'll be producing and providing to you in June. But the recommendation was to continue the current board policies on service area and fares, because clearly that, again, establishes a baseline and helps us to distinguish between the role that WMATA should be playing versus the other agencies in the region. Also underscores what we're doing with bus stop improvements. We've talked about travel training. Metro does travel training in-house, but there is a need to do more of this in the region. The demand exceeds our staff of travel trainers. So what we tend to do is we hold workshops where we teach other organizations. We train the trainer, and we create more travel training capability in other organizations. This is something that we can never do enough of. And, you know, one of the things that we've been told also by our Accessibility Advisory Committee is that that travel training should also include information on how to safely use the system, not simply how to pay the fare and navigate. And our travel training curriculum has that in it as well. There are grant funds that have been lended to travel training from COG. The New Freedom Funds have been used several times for that. We're advocating for more of that in the future. But these last two items are a little bit new in the sense that we've already been promoting fixed route transit use just by simply informing people of the fact that the option is there and how to use the system. But it's important to note that when people apply for paratransit eligibility, it isn't as simple as you're fully eligible for the service and you're going to ride paratransit all the time, or you're not eligible for the service and you're never going to use it. More than half of the people who apply for the service have a legitimate eligibility for it some of the time, but the rest of the time we find that they are capable of using fixed route transit. So the expected outcome is not necessarily that we want to see lower numbers of eligible customers. What we want to see is simply fewer trips being taken on paratransit. Whether the customer, you know, is fully eligible or conditionally eligible, we want to help them choose fixed route options more often whenever they can. This is a discretionary choice because paratransit's a civil right. We can't turn anyone away, but what we can do is we can help the customer to make an informed choice, because fixed route is most often the most independent travel option, and once customers see that, they have a tendency to make that choice. So our efforts are going to be much more aggressive in really not only making people aware of those options, but kind of highlighting and promoting why they should choose fixed route over paratransit. And, you know, that may take the form of different kinds of promotions, but certainly it's going to involve us doing much more in-depth analysis of paratransit use, you know, by locality to see if, you know, for example, if groups of people are all taking paratransit to go to a common destination, we can provide other ways of getting them there that would not require separate paratransit vehicles. And then the last item under demand management was trip-by-trip eligibility. I mentioned that we do have conditional eligibility with paratransit, but at the moment, that's merely a data point. We now know that more than half of the registrants can use fixed route service. But when that conditionally eligible customer, let's say that the condition is that they have low vision, so they would need paratransit service at night, but during the daytime they could use fixed route. If they reserve a paratransit trip during the day, Metro doesn't tell them that they can't. We have not taken it that far. Because frankly, you know, that's something, that's an evolving process. We promised the board when we first talked about this several years ago that we would come back to you and talk to you when we obtained the technical capability to do that, where a customer would make that reservation and something would pop up on the screen and say, you know, really this was meant to be a trip that you'd take on fixed route, and at least there'd be a conversation. For us to implement that is obviously a public relations issue. We need to make sure the customers understood that. So as part of pursuing this, what we're committing to do is to come back to you and talk about what technical capability we've built into the system and how we would roll it out to the customers. That's something that we see on the horizon. For cost reduction, we have looked, especially when we implemented the new business model in 2013, for ways to create more efficiency in how we're currently managing Metro access. And we've done some interesting things, like we provide the fuel for all of our contract operators. We take advantage of saving the excise tax with Metro's tax-exempt status, and we've been able to put a great deal of money back on the bottom line as a result of that. Now we are exploring for the future Metro-provided operating facilities as well, because we see some real economies there, not just in terms of locating them for minimal deadhead, but also just to save the fact that these have typically been rented facilities. There's turnover when the contracts change, and we see opportunities there to have a more stable infrastructure with our facilities. And then finally, this is an interesting one. We've had a few jurisdictions approach us over the years to say, does paratransit service have to be delivered by WMATA, or could we do our own? Some of the jurisdictions are doing their own service. There are alternatives out there, like Arlington Star has, you know, a fantastic alternative to Metro Access. In Fairfax County, FastTran service has been in existence since 1986. There are some examples out there of other jurisdictionally based services that could be more cost-effective alternatives to paratransit provided by WMATA, and because of the fact that they're community services, they also often meet the needs of the customer better. So this is something that would also be part of our recommendation to discuss that more with our jurisdictional partners. And then finally, on human service agencies, we have had a successful pilot program in partnership with MDOT in Montgomery County, where for the last year we have had a human service agency operate their own paratransit type service, having hired their own contractor. And WMATA was not the middleman anymore in that arrangement, and that's worked very well. We recently signed an MOU to extend that agreement to the end of this fiscal year, and as a matter of fact, MDOT is preparing to embark on a second pilot, this time in Prince George's County with the ARC, which we believe is going to be very promising as well. And again, the reason is that it's a tailored service, that the customers who go to that human service agency can get the transportation that they need, but they don't have to make reservations through our process, and the cost does not include WMATA's administrative expenses in administering an ADA program. What the study will recommend on top of what we've already done is that some of these human service agencies could continue this capability if we provided them vehicles. So one of the things that we've explored is that when the Metro Access vans retire after 4 years, they still have some life left after them. We retain them during the FTA recommended useful life for a medium-duty paratransit vehicle. But when you move it into a smaller environment, they actually can have three or four more years of useful life beyond that for other organizations. And when you provide those accessible vehicles, you're enabling these organizations to continue providing their own transportation, and that has some tremendous benefit. Some other public transit agencies also provide direct funding to the human service agencies, saying, you know, you could take this money, and instead of sending people through paratransit, we're going to empower you to continue to operate your own service. These are matters of policy and things that, of course, we would want to offer the board the opportunity to ask us more questions about, but they are being done successfully in other parts of the country. Most notably, Orange County, California, in particular, has been subsidizing human service transportation for some years now. We did mention, of course, that we have talked with jurisdictions in the past about administering some of their own programs, and again, that's something that we would continue to do. So finally, I'll conclude by saying that we are going to provide the study as promised in June. The final document will have the statistical information in it that that kind of underscores the demographic shifts we're talking about, the, you know, the projection of expense. You know, we're going to continue to drill down on how that impact is going to occur at the jurisdictional level. And then we also want to follow on delivering that report to you with specific recommendations of actions that we can take to start mitigating the cost. But really, and of course also vetting these things with the Accessibility Advisory Committee. But I will close by saying that one of the most important things that we need to do is that Metro staff needs to have someone in each of the jurisdictions that we can talk to who can not only work with us on operational recommendations, but also on funding. Because the path of funding has been one of the biggest barriers. Trying to look at right now money flowing through WMATA for paratransit, how could it be redirected to support some of these alternatives? Because really some of that heavy lifting can't be done by WMATA. So it's going to be really important for us to work with each of you and your staffs on that. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kent. And I'm sure we have lots of questions. I'm going to start with Mr. Giancola. He raised his hand before we stopped, and Mr. Downing.
Thank you, Mr. Kent, for your report, as thorough as always. On the chart of ridership and cost outlook, I'm not sure some of your projections are that good. I saw the dip in ridership and costs from 2009 or 10 and 11 down, and then it starts to show that growth going up again. But it seems to me you're using the 1 year delta there or 2 year delta to go all the way up. And I'm just kind of curious what your parameters you're using to project the growth. You know, I've been in areas where, you know, regional agencies, in this case, I guess it would be the COG, maybe other organizations, do aggregate analysis on the disabled and elderly. I've actually done it in some reports I've done over the years, and even to the point of doing disaggregate analysis of where they are. So the question is, what parameters are you using to do those projections? I could see it coming in between the 2.5 and 3 million, but not anywhere near the high projections.
Well, I certainly understand that viewpoint, because really what we've provided for you is more of kind of a theoretical trend line, because it was meant to kind of run the gamut between the possible outcomes. The way that we project paratransit ridership is through actuarial analysis. What we saw prior to 2009 is that throughout the history of the service, it's always been an upward movement of ridership. And the only reason why we saw the reduction in those recent fiscal years was because we had applied the demand management approach to a full cycle of customers who had not been through our new eligibility process. Once we completed that, the previous demographic trend kind of resumed. And what we're really saying here is that there's flexibility in these outcomes depending on how diligently that we pursue demand management. It definitely was not meant to say this will happen. It was more that it could happen.
Have you actually talked to some of the regional agencies to see if they've done that kind of analysis of projections?
Regional.
You mentioned actuary, but have you actually talked to some of the agencies, like COG or others that are studying that, or even the jurisdictional?
Well, the information on
yes or no, I didn't really need a discussion on it. Have you contacted those agencies to see if they've done some analysis of this?
COG has been a participant with us.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's move to Mr. Daly. Are there any other questions of Ms. Porter?
To leave that up, whatever the point in the range that is going to occur 10 years from now, it will never be lower than it is today. Inexorably, it's going up. This is a civil right. This is a requirement. We have an obligation under the ADA and our agreements with the federal government to be a provider, not necessarily the only provider, of paratransit. The difference here of going up by 50 million versus potentially going up by 90 million is something we have to take seriously. The rider pays very little, pays more than our regular riders, but comes nowhere near covering the cost. Therefore, that $50 to $90 million comes to our bottom line. Either we raise fares on our regular riders to cover that, or we turn to the jurisdictions and say, we must provide this, we need more in the way of subsidy. It's not an optional item, but I would argue it is very much in the interest of the jurisdictions to work with us to achieve some bending of the curve, whether it is through sharing the services, whether perhaps it's through the human resources agencies, where you support them, but if you're supporting them and they're passing their costs off to us by shedding their services, it's coming back to us as subsidy. We're going to ask, well, we're all in this together. It's one of the many things that we have to cooperate on, but it's one where we have some ability to set our course and come to some favorable outcome. Otherwise, it's pretty likely we'll hit the high end than the low end, and we'll all be talking about the inefficiencies of Metro and the terrible financial condition that we've created. This one is something we can work on. We have to work on.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Mr.
Thank you. One of the things about this chart is that one of the drivers of that upward curve from here on out is the demographic aging the population. And anybody who has done analysis of future needs for services of various kinds to the aging and disabled population is looking at numbers like this. I mean, the federal government is staring these same numbers in the face also in terms of programs for the elderly. And so what we're looking at, this is not a problem of, you know, we're not doing the program correctly. This is coming to terms with something that's happening across the country. We baby boomers, I'm one of them. We have distorted, you know, the culture as we've moved through, sort of like the, you know, bulge through the snake. We've distorted the culture all the way through. And now that we are getting older, we are going to be, you know, using services at a much higher rate. So one of the ways of sort of containing this is to look at, for example, Montgomery County already has specialized transit for people who are older. It's not terribly accessible. That hasn't been what it's been focused on. But there may be some ways to modify that in some ways that would take some of the load off Metro Access. So, you know, looking at this not being as a program issue, but looking at this as how do we deal with the demographic change that every entity that provides services to people who are elderly and disabled is dealing with, probably would give us a better way of looking at it.
This seems to be the paper chart, the scarier chart. One or two questions on it. I assume that this is a national trend, the demographics of this. I assume that similar studies have been done by FTA, by APTA, by other agencies.
Yes.
In your final report, when we get it, could you also point out what studies have been done and what growth rates and projections are in those charts by various different authorities out there so we can have a baseline for comparing what you're projecting would happen?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Second question. Is the percentage increases in cost for the program, is that just derivative of the percentage increases, or did you actually factor in what you thought the additional cost would be in terms of charges for paratransit riders as opposed to the cost of the contractors for providing the services?
The numbers in the near term are more precise. As you try to project further and further out, it becomes more derivative of just the ridership driver because that's the primary cost driver.
So in the near term, what you're saying is 16, 17, 18, you're pretty comfortable with those as the projected cost for the paratransit operation?
Yes, sir.
And then it becomes more of a guesstimate.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. One more question. In one of the charts, you had an acronym, CAPS.
Go ahead. We're going to limit the question so we can do that. Okay.
You had an acronym, CAPS. Could you just explain what the acronym stands for?
Certainly. It's Coordinated Alternative to Paratransit Service.
I'm glad I asked.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Mr. Downs and then Mr. Bulger.
I want to remind everybody that the DIP was not just certification. The DIP was... The board made the decision to reduce the area of service to the legally mandated service area. That's as far down as we can go because we are at the legally required limits of service. The second was that we decided that we would try to control demand through pricing. And we've come to the conclusion reluctantly that we probably reached the limits of our ability to control growth through pricing of the customers of this service. I think one powerful tool that you mentioned briefly, but the forecast of cost and ridership has to be broken out by funding jurisdiction and by the counties in the surrounding jurisdictions so that it becomes very clear what the costs are per jurisdiction because they vary widely, I might say wildly, in this region. And the other is a suggestion. We all kind of know that Virginia's cost on paratransit service are the lowest in this region for a variety of reasons. Their service is as comprehensive and as community-based as it is any place in the region. It is a really important thing to do, to have a case study for the region, for decision makers, about how Virginia got to the position that it's in, which is different than both Maryland and the district, and that is a functioning regional model that we could probably learn from. I know you probably think there are lots of problems with it, but it works better in Virginia, seemingly, than it does in the rest of the region. So a case history showing how it evolved, how the model might be applicable to other jurisdictions after they see the price tag going forward, to put a potential solution together with a future cost.
Thank you. And Ms. Hines.
Thanks. I wanted to share a statistic. It's been noted in lots of places that Arlington has the largest percentage of millennials of any community in the United States. However, our fastest growing group of residents, not the largest, but the fastest growing group, is people my age and older who are moving into our urban corridors because they want a less car dependent lifestyle. And so we're going to keep seeing that. The good news, I think, for WMATA on this is that they have fabulous fixed route available to them, both in terms of bus and in terms of rail. They also get a discount on those because if they're over 60 or 65, I think it's 65, they get a senior fare. So that's another piece of what's going on in this region too. And so I really do want to echo our need to understand jurisdiction by jurisdiction what the trends are telling us. I want to echo what Tom said about case study being very important when you come back to us, Christian, that we can understand who's paying for what. You know, I see things like we're going to spin vehicles out, and the first thing that comes to my mind is, did I, as Arlington, help buy those vehicles or not, and how do we think about that moving forward if we were to end up with our model or Fairfax's model more regionally? How would we think through? There's a whole bunch of questions about inputs versus what comes out and how we think about that. But I do know, based on our experience, that it is possible to bend the curve. And I would tell you that most of my star riders are, you know, it's not that it's problem-free, but they're generally happy with the service that they're getting. And it's organized slightly differently. So I think the more we can share what, you know, from Kathy's to what, you know, what Montgomery's doing that has possibilities to what we've been doing now, I think close to 10 years, I think that really does give us a place for a really informed conversation.
Okay. Mr. Bolger, and then
Thanks for the report. Christian, board member Downs and I worked really hard to try to get the District of Columbia cabs to pick up some of the demand. How's that going? And then I had another question. That I'll, how's Loudoun County? Is Loudoun County counted in here when we get the train out to Loudoun?
Well, I can answer that one first. That
okay.
When we talked about phase two of the Silver Line with Loudoun, they have indicated, at least up to this point, that they want to continue to operate their own paratransit-type service. They did not ask WMATA to do that. So what we're limited to is operating around the corridor for the Silver Line stations that do go into Loudoun. We would still be responsible for that. And our projections are that ridership would be very, very low. So we don't see a significant cost cost impact there. On the DC taxi program, it has reached 3,000 rides, which is really positive. That's the monthly total. So we're pretty happy about the successful launch of it, but we've opened it actually to other types of medical facilities that offer dialysis trips, not just or dialysis treatment, not just the dialysis centers per se. And the more that we tell the customers about the service, the more they like it. I think one of the things that they have reported to us, though, is they're asking us to take a look at the price differential between the cost of per trip versus Metro Access, because since our fares are proportional, some people are paying less and some people are paying slightly more for the service, because our fares range from 340 all the way up until 650, and the taxi program is at $5. So that's something they've mentioned, is that there may be some room there to work on that. But
to what Mary was talking about and what Tom was talking about as an alternative that we might want to take another look at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes, sir.
For other cab companies in other jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kennan. I wanted to. Request?
What I've been hearing in terms of the study, which I think we all will benefit from, but what I am hearing is we should include price tags by jurisdiction, but not just the aggregate number, but who may be in a position to have to pay it, and some scenarios, not just ideas, but maybe scenarios of different ways we might go and what those would provide for in terms of finance and service. We want to maintain good service. But I think people need to see some scenarios. If we do this, here's how it works. And the other thing, I know there was a comparative study that you shared with us, I believe done by New York, that
yes.
looked at paratransit in various regions. But people haven't seen that. They should look at it again. The message is everybody is looking at the same issue. And among these big city paratransit operations, ours is one of the most cost-effective. So it's not a management issue. It's strictly an inexorable. We're all getting older. Some of us older than others.
And that reminder. I do want to focus on that last slide, because we really are looking at this in term, looking forward to, one, the 2017 budget, but I think more importantly the long term and that collaborative approach that we need with the jurisdictions. And I think we need it beyond just about looking at services that are delivering, but I think it goes to what Mrs. Hines noted, is how are we developing communities that are going to be served, and how can we more efficiently develop them so that there are better alternatives out there. Every decision that we make is going to have some kind of impact. And when we look at that impact, how is it going to impact this service too? When you move a station one direction or another, it may very well have an impact as well, whether or not it must be paratransit service versus fixed route service. So I think those are decisions that we need to think about throughout the work that we do, not just focusing on how we're going to do the service after all of those other decisions are made, and jurisdictional communication with our human services, but also other folks within the jurisdictions that have an impact. Thank you very much. This is very important. And with that, we will.
Mrs. Hudgens?
Yes.
Could I just make a request on subsequent agendas for mm-hmm. your consideration?
Mm-hmm.
As many know, when we did the docket, we all sort of have now made a decision we're going to postpone any bus adjustments. And there's one that Arlington is extremely interested in being able to implement before the end of this calendar year. So if it's possible that we can make sure that we get to putting together the docket for the State of Good Repair bus stuff in a timely manner, so that there's not a question. I would just request that if we could get that done before we take our August recess, so we're all clear, it would be helpful.
The intent is the last two or three years we've come in July, and we're planning on coming back this July also.
I'd love to do it in June, Mr. Weequa, if we could.
We'll take a look at it.
If we set that docket in June, or July, the hearing, excuse me, the hearings would happen when?
Changes can take, we can move service changes probably by December.
But hearings would occur when?
If we were to go in June, can we have the hearings in July so we
well,
can...
Well, I hate the idea of hearings in July.
Do you?
Because people are gone.
Yeah.
People are gone. Yeah.
We don't need a lot of time to set up the hearings.
The hearings should occur when the population is here and ready to respond to them.
Just as, like I said, we're anxious about this particular one.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. With that, we are adjourned.
We have an executive session of the board upstairs. I'd like to get everybody there as quick as we can. We have a lot to talk about. 25.